I neglected to mention earlier, and I apologize to Ian for this, that there is simultaneous translation services available, and so in French and English, and so we actually encourage people to take advantage of that since we paid for it. So it will make Ian happy if only one of you uses it. But please remember that that is available. Okay, next we have Glenda Mazaroba.
Yes.
Morning. First of all, I would like to express my gratitude to Professor Philip Oxhorn and Institute for the Study of International Development, who have kindly invited me to this meeting. I would also like to thank Cheryl, Monica, and Ian for their time and kindness in helping me with the preparations that precede my trip to Montreal. Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here to speak about a Brazilian National Truth Commission to discuss the principal challenge faced by TRCs and the lessons they may provide. From the Brazilian experience, my frame will be the Brazilian experience, I will try to address the four transversal questions raised under this conference. Let's start. We have a Brazilian military dictatorship. It started 50 years ago in 1964. This year we have this 50 anniversary. The military dictatorship was constituted in Brazil within the Cold War logic. So it means a fight against the so-called internal left-wing subversion. At that moment is the communist threat. And reestablish the order in the country. The dictatorship, put in place 50 years ago, as I told, considered all those opposed to its ideas as enemies of the state. So we have this coup d'etat at that moment, and during the dictatorship, we don't have the rule of law. It was the constant disregard for fundamental legal principles. A huge repressive powers worked that time. The Brazilian dictatorship went through at least three different stages in the Brazilian case. During the first, in a few months after the coup d'etat, from April 1964, 50,000 people were detained, ships were converted into prisons, and at least 5,000 investigations were open involving more than 40,000 people, just in the first months after the coup d'etat. So this first etage, this first stage, is the consolidation of the military-imposed regime. The second stage began in 1968 with the adoption of Institutional Act 5, which granted to the President of the Republic powers to close the National Congress and intervene in the states of the Federation in the provinces and suspend individual rights such as habeas corpus. During Brazilian dictatorship, during 10 years, we don't have this right to habeas corpus. At that moment, the press censorship was intense and the repression reached its peak at this 68 until 75. Thousands of Brazilians were tortured, exiled, or deprived of their political rights, and it included women and children, and around 4 or 50 people were killed or disappeared. This number is before the Brazilian Truth Commission. Now we are discovered that there is more people killed or disappeared. So, because we have this dictatorship and this this legacy, we need to deal with this, these issues. The third stage, the Brazilian dictatorship began with the President Geisel in 1974 and was marked by the slow and gradual opening of the political system and extended until the end of dictatorship. So it means during 14 years is our process of opening, became democratic country. We have this amnesty law. It was conceived by the dictatorship for the purpose of forgetting and ensuring impunity. A transitional just policy has never been adopted in Brazil until now, a policy. But we have some laws and specific initiatives have constituted mechanisms for dealing with part of this legacy of human rights violations. The Brazilian state started and had invested mainly in financial compensation or restitution. So we have this amnesty law in 1979. It means impunity. And in 1995, we have this law of disappear, and we create, the Brazilian state creates a commission to deal with these victims. And it was the first time that the state recognized the responsibility for these gross human rights violations. In 2002, the Congress approved this law that pay reparations for victims of political persecution. But these reparations is just pay for victims that have some kind of economic losses. It's not for victims of torture, for example. It doesn't mind if this victim was tortured or not. This victim must show that he or she lost some economic aspects. So it means that who's the truth is very, very important issue in Brazilian case, because it's not only the truth, but which kind of truth. It's very important issue, and I really appreciate when you put in this this program this question. The Brazilian state start to deal with truth, in some sense, with the amnesty law in 1979. At that moment, the lawyers that representing political persecute individuals, they were granted access to the files, to the military court files, to ask for amnesty for these clients. So while they preparing amnesty petitions for exiled or imprisoned clients, they decide, a very small group of lawyers, and they decided to develop the Brazil Never Again project, Brasil Nunca Mais. The title was inspired in the CONADEP from Argentina through commission, that is Nunca Mais, and ours is Brasil Never Again, Brasil Nunca Mais. The project means going through the files in detail and using the information contained in them to try to ensure that this kind of violations that period until 64-79 never happen again. It's a brave study about torture. The most important until these days is this report. The files of the dictatorship start being opened in early 90s by the first democratic elected civilian president. And in August 2007, the government launched a book. The name is Direito à Memória e Verdade. And this is a 500-page report and tells the story of these 400 or 500 political activists missing or dead. This is the book. This book in August 2007 is the first official state document to attribute to members of the security forces crimes like torture, rape, and murder of opponents already under arrest. So it was a very important moment of this process of settling accounts. And now we have the Brazilian True Commission and the challenge to put together a lot of very different voices. So at this moment, because Brazilian True Commission, National True Commission was created in 2012 We are dealing, of course, with the victim's voice. It's the first time in a huge sense. But we have also the archives of the dictatorship, and we have also records of foreign countries. We are working together with some countries in this sense. And also we are using records of international institutions and multilateral organizations. So we are trying to put together a lot of different voices and to deal with this issue. When we talk about the True Commission, we are need to also kind in Brazilian case what kind of truth, because the main obstacle to progress in settling accounts in Brazilian case is the amnesty law until these days. The amnesty law is very curious because this law has been interpreted by the public, not by the judiciary, but the public, the whole society, in the same sense since its enactment. It means forgetting and impunity. The law was very few tested in the courts. I just know two cases, and during the dictatorship, the first one. And it's very impressive that we can maintain the meaning of the law in the same sense the dictatorship. In Brazilian case, as I told you, we don't have a political of transitional justice until this day, but we have some specific initiatives and some laws that constitute mechanisms for dealing with part of this legacy of human rights violations. But the most of these initiatives have been informed by the logic of the military dictatorship. I always think that we use until these days the vocabulary or the grammar of dictatorship. It's not the most part of time, it's not a democratic language. Of course, this has ensured the persistence of the interpretation of the amnesty on the terms conceived by the dictatorship. That is, of course, for the purpose of forgetting the violations and accepting their perpetrators' impunity. So here I think I can show you some examples. It means late 1960s, or during the dictatorship, the first years of the dictatorship, the Brazilian state paid reparations to victims of political persecute. The Brazilian state pays. And tortured victims included during the dictatorship. And since 1978, on several occasions, the Brazilian state has been held legally responsible for the imprisonment, torture, rape, murder, but just the civil responsibility of the state. So during the dictatorship, in some sense, the state was considered guilty in the civil area, but at this moment, 2014, 50 years after the coup d'etat, not a single perpetrator has been found guilty in Brazilian case. So we don't have this criminal responsibility of public agents in the Brazilian case. So also, since 1995, the legislation failed to name victims. When we start this process of settling accounts, the first law is amnesty law, but it's not, of course, we cannot consider a law that tried to settling accounts, but in some sense it happens. But when, during the democracy, the president sent to Congress the first law never used the word victim, as yesterday the Canadian experience took note. In Brazilian cases, the same. The main laws that deal with this human rights legacy neglect mention the term victims. They use affected people or amnesty people, so the victims are not victims for the law and for the society. And, of course, until these days, for the victims, it's very hard to recognize them as victims. So when I think it's better to read from here. When we are looking for the truth and looking for justice, we need to keep in mind in Brazilian case that Brazilian is a country that have selective compliance with laws. In the Brazilian case, as I told, laws have constituted mechanisms for dealing with part of the legacy of massive human rights violations. Commissions have helped the Brazilian state to fulfill its duty to offer reparations to the victims, but such initiatives, as I told, have been informed by the logic of the dictatorship. The Brazilian state has failed in this effort during the democracy to recognize applicants as citizens with equal rights. The payments to some former political persecuted individuals that are significantly larger than those allotted to the relatives of fatal victims. Remember that I told this, we have this Comissão da Anistia and this second law. This law pay reparations for people that had some kind of economic losses. And in sometimes depends the if a victim is, for example, an engineer or something that can receive a lot of money during his professional life, they can receive more than the relatives of a dead or missed victims. Those affected by serious human rights violations, such as torture, as I mentioned, for example, have had their rights ignored. Until this moment, we don't have law for this. And it's very curious in a country that we have selective compliance with laws, the strong way that amnesty law did catch on. And, of course, this has assured impunity to state agents accused of this kind of crimes. So, thinking about justice and reconciliation, at this moment we are dealing with this effort in a Brazilian National Truth Commission. It was created by the law, in November 2011, and just exists because victims of the harms took action in the same sense in the Canadian experience. It's a very strong effort during a lot of time, and they can put this in some sense that the government can prepare a law. I was advisor of some people that write the law, and it was a very hard to deal with this issue, but not in the mainly sense that the most of time is hard, but hard in some sense that we can realize that human rights issues in Brazil is very unimportant. It doesn't, the most people doesn't mind of this. You can see in this photo, in the center, this woman is our president, Dilma Rousseff, and she was a victim of dictatorship. She stayed in prison a long time and was very hard tortured. And she appointed the 7 members of the National Truth Commission in May 12. Is the second line, these 7 people, you can see white hair, and this is the commission from Brazilian Truth Commission. The president stressed that the decision to establish the commission was an initiative of the Brazilian state, not the government. It's very important. I think it was very impressive at that moment. If you look at the last line, the president is in the middle, and the former presidents, after the dictatorship, all are together. So you can see from right to left a very different president. Some never think about human rights, but they are together in this effort, in the Brazilian state effort to deal with the truth. And of course, all them is civilian. The third person here with this mustache, he is a first president after the dictatorship. He was not elected, but because at that moment we don't have elections. But she put together all these presidents to signalize that this is an effort from the Brazilian state. The Brazilian National Truth Commission has 2 years Its mandate is 2 years. It's supposed to finish next May, but the president gave us last December, she gave us more 7 months, so we need to finish our work in December. Brazilian National Truth Commission has 13 working groups. Of course, the focus is the serious human rights violation, missing and dead people, and of course, victims of torture, because we don't deal with this issue until these days. The Brazilian Truth Commission made a statement very early that it would only analyze crimes committed by the government agents, not the crimes for the other side. Brazilian Truth Commission has a political and operational independence. It's totally independent. It's supposed to be supervision from the or by society, and the authorities' cooperation very well. We have access to all official documents that period, and. The Brazilian Truth Commission don't have this legal authority to put defendants on trial, but could denounce and determine responsibilities at the end of the work, and also may also reveal the names of those responsible. This is at this moment a big issue inside the Brazilian Truth Commission, because they need to decide if naming names or no. But we can. The Brazilian Truth Commission can do this. So when we think about challenges and lessons regarding the Brazilian experience, but we are in a work in progress, so it's a little bit early to say lessons, but maybe. Of course, the most important challenge is giving victims a voice. Because remember, a lot of victims never realize that they are victims, so it's hard. In the first moment, it was really hard to put these people thinking and telling all it happens. Of course, we need to change always. We need to consider the reality of the country. It's a country-specific model. I think it happens in all commissions. Of course, also access to official documents, it's a very hard issue. And international support also. We have this a very impressive challenge that is the data deluge, because Truth Commission must deal with enormous amount of information. And of course, through statements taken directly from the victims, witness and survivors, information from public and private archives. In Brazilian case, we have several archives from the military dictatorship, the intelligence service, the police, detention centers, and even the armed forces that are already in the public domain. To have an idea, only in the national archives are the 16 million documents. It's not pages, it's documents, because sometimes one document has just one page, but a lot of time they have thousands of pages. And these 16 million documents is totally open for Brazilian Truth Commission. So to deal with this issue, Brazilian Truth Commission established a database for storing, organizing, and analyzing this information, for sure. And at this moment, inside of our database, we have more than 90 files, 2,000 million PDF pages, and our search time when we need to find something, for example, top secret information in this huge universe, we spend 6 minutes when we search for this keyword. Before I have a video, and before I finish, I think in Brazilian case, time also is a time constraint, is also a very important issue. And we are trying to deal with this issue in our work, because we have this gap between generations. The most, a lot of perpetrators are died. All the former dictators passed away. There is no former president lives until this day. And of course, a lot of victims also died. So in the Brazilian case, we can realize, in some sense, in Canadian, it happens the same in other countries also, the time stolen a lot of things or some possibilities of truth for Brazilian case. But also the time gave us some kind of tools as this to deal with this legacy. So we are trying to put together these losses and benefits to try to deal with this issue. Now I would like to share with you a video. In video, we can see the work of Brazilian True Commission, and also we put together the speech of the President Dilma Rousseff when she created the Brazilian True Commission that day. Yes.
Queria iniciar citando o deputado Ulisses Guimarães, que se vivesse ainda, certamente, ocuparia um lugar de honra nessa solenidade. O senhor Diretas, como aprendemos a reverenciá-lo, disse uma vez: a verdade não desaparece quando é eliminada a opinião dos que divergem. A verdade não mereceria este nome se morresse quando censurada. A verdade, de fato, não morre por ter sido escondida. Nas sombras, somos todos privados da verdade, mas não é justo que continuemos apartados dela à luz do dia.
Eu embarquei dentro de um avião, aí eu fui, perguntei para um dos comandantes que ia indo perto de mim o que era que ele ia levando, por qual motivo que ele ia me levando. Aí ele falou assim: ó, índio, não precisa perguntar muita coisa para mim não, porque senão, se você perguntar mais alguma coisa, eu sou capaz de jogar você fora do avião.
A palavra verdade, na tradição grega ocidental, é exatamente o contrário da palavra esquecimento. É algo tão surpreendentemente forte que não abriga nem o ressentimento, nem o ódio, nem tampouco o perdão. Ela é só e, sobretudo, o contrário do esquecimento. É memória e é história. É a capacidade humana de contar o que aconteceu.
Sozinho, subi uma grade, alguns presos que estão aqui lembram, quando eu consegui olhar lá embaixo, aqueles 50 e poucos presos, a minha visão é que aqueles homens estavam num campo de concentração. Aqueles homens estavam metade vida, eles estavam aniquilados. O peso da tortura transformou aquele sujeito, e quando eu vi todos reunidos, eles eram magros, não podiam usar ponte nos dentes, cabelo por fazer, não podiam usar cinto, todos eles seguravam as calças. Não vi meu pai ser torturado. Eu vi o que a tortura fez com meu pai.
Ao instalar a Comissão da Verdade, não nos move o revanchismo, o ódio ou o desejo de reescrever a história de uma forma diferente do que aconteceu. Mas nos move a necessidade imperiosa de conhecê-la, em sua plenitude, sem ocultamentos, sem camuflagem, sem vetos e sem proibições. Eu já tinha sido torturada por ele, pela equipe dele, pessoalmente por ele. Choques elétricos no ouvido, nos dedos dos pés, das mãos, né? E fui levada umas 2 ou 3 vezes para o Hospital das Clínicas. Eu me tornei uma mulher estéril. Se a Comissão Nacional da Verdade, se nós militantes não levarmos esses fatos são fatos educadores que vão formar as novas gerações. Caso não façamos isso, os amarildos continuarão, porque tudo continua igual. As delegacias torturam, matam, sequestram e desaparecem com os corpos.
A ignorância sobre a história não pacifica, pelo contrário, mantém latentes mágoas e rancores. A desinformação não ajuda a apaziguar, apenas facilita o trânsito da intolerância. A sombra e a mentira não são capazes de promover a concórdia. O Brasil merece a verdade. As novas gerações merecem a verdade. E, sobretudo, merecem a verdade factual aqueles que perderam amigos e parentes e que continuam sofrendo, como se eles morressem de novo e sempre, a cada dia.
Esperar passar por aquela situação, tendo em vista que eu escutava a ditadura acabou, mas não tinha acabado não. Eu continuei ali dentro daquela situação, só por ser amante de um grande professor, Darcy Ribeiro, e por ter, estar lendo, que eu não podia ler, eu fui dentro do alojamento, fui pego de surpresa, eu estava lendo um artigo no jornal, falando sobre Darcy Ribeiro, obviamente que o Brizola também era citado, e de repente eu estava sendo acusado de pertencer a partido político, sendo acusado de ser um subversivo, jurando bandeira para dar minha vida por esse país, e o que eles me deram foi o quê? As bordoadas eram verdadeiras. O meu joelho não é mais como antes, eu sou sobrevivente, mas libertado não fui.
Eu acrescentaria que a força pode esconder a verdade. A tirania pode impedi-la de circular livremente. O medo pode adiá-la, mas o tempo acaba por trazer a luz. Hoje, esse tempo chegou.